Today's conversation with a college-age student is with Bryn Mulligan. This series of three conversations with young people that we're releasing here in the second half of March came out of a previous conversation that Shana and I had with Leif Seligman. Leif is an itinerant minister and adjunct professor at Keene State College here in New Hampshire. You can hear our original conversation with Leif, which dropped on March 9th, 2023. Shana, my dear, for context, if you would, say a little more about our conversation with Leif.
It was part of a bigger theme that we were working on, which is this pervasive sense of emptiness and meaningless so many Americans are living with right now. But Leif was talking specifically about the experience she's had in her classroom with her co-learners, her students, and the insights into what's going on with them that she got. Chris and I found that so interesting, we decided to find some young adults and actually interview them. And what follows is, it was really insightful for both Chris and I, and of course we hope it is for you as well. I think these are voices and perspectives that we don't hear much from in community at large. And so in some respects, they represent the voices of a marginalized group, but a very critically important marginalized group, because these are the individuals who are inheriting the shit show we're making out of culture right now. But I hope that their insights help you to be more curious and to go deep and then to shine a little light out in our world that desperately needs it.
Thank you, Shana. As part of our continuing series on resisting emptiness and choosing hope, we are happy to have a conversation with Bryn Mulligan, who is a freshman at Keene State College. She will talk a little bit more about herself in a second. But Bryn, thank you so much for agreeing to join us.
Thank you for having me.
So our wanting to connect with you in this conversation is, as you know, but I'll say this for our listening community, it's an outgrowth of the conversation we had with your co-learner and teacher, Leif Seligman, who basically shared with us her experience with you and your age group at college. And so as we listened to Leif in her reflections, it became a very natural follow-on to say, as we looked at each other in the project that we do, we want to talk to young people directly and hear what life is like for you all. So that's what we're doing. But before we get there, if you could help our listening community just know a little bit about you, where are you from and where are you now?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say Leif is the best. This is my second semester with Leif, and she is just the best professor, but co-learner that I could ask for. I'm so grateful to have her for a second semester. It was fun the first semester, and it's been so much fun this semester as well. So I'm Bryn Mulligan. I'm from a small town in New Hampshire, Warner. Not very many people go there for any reason, but yeah, I came to Keene State because honestly, I really wanted to take a gap year and I really wanted to nanny for a family friend. I love working with kids. I love babies especially. And I really wanted to be a nanny, but none of my friends were taking a gap year and I'm very social and I felt really scared to be isolated if I didn't come to college. But college was never, ever something that I looked forward to or I kind of wanted to come here for. So I actually didn't apply to any colleges or think that I wanted to go to college until April of last year, which is when everybody was already committed and had their roommates and everything. So Keene was kind of my first choice because, well, the applications were still open. And that was, you know, something that I needed, and it just was close. My boyfriend actually goes to Franklin Pierce University. So it's a 30-minute drive from there. I love that it's a college town, and I've loved it so far. I couldn't have imagined taking a gap year. I can't imagine where I'd be if I hadn't come here, and I'm really grateful that I made the choice that I did at the time.
What makes Leaf such a good teacher?
I could go on. I could talk about this for hours. She is like out of this world. I've never met a person like Leaf before. She is the most intuitive, caring, compassionate person I've ever met. She just, especially as a professor, she's going to be like, I'm your co-learner, not your professor. She's the best. But as a professor, she's perfect. She has no bossy bone in her body. She has nothing that really powers over you. She sees you as a human being, and that's it. She sees you as who you are and who you come to class with, and that is it. She doesn't expect a single thing more of you. You can come to class and be having your worst day ever, and she will not expect a single thing out of you. If you want to show up and say, I'm having a terrible day, I need to go back, she will say, I send you light, I send you love, do what you need to do. If you email her and say, Leaf, I'm having the worst day ever, I can't bring myself to come to class, she will do the same thing. And if you come to class and you say, all I can bring is myself and I can't do anything else, I can't talk right now, I'm just bringing myself, she will take a moment. She'll say, everybody send Bryn light, and send her love and send her light, and she'll continue the class, and she'll check in on you. She'll send you emails later on checking in on you. She is just the most understanding person I have ever met, and she's just so caring and kind and loving, and she's so easy to talk to. I could go on for hours. She is just honestly the most like wonderful person I have ever met, and I'm so grateful also that I came to Keene, because I don't know where I'd be without her. I'm so happy that I had her as a professor last semester, and then when I thought that it was going to be her last semester in December when we left, but she decided to come back because she made a commitment to teach this semester. And when I found out she was teaching another semester, I had a plan to write her this whole long letter. Don't tell her I'm going to do it at the end of this semester, but telling her how much she means to me and what she's done for me. And when I found out that she was going to teach this semester, I dropped everything. I planned her class, and I thought, you know what? I will plan my other classes around it. I don't care if I have to take four other classes that I don't care about. Leaf's class is the only one that I need to take. And I said I was going to go to my advisor and say, listen, I have to take Leaf's class. It's important. And she said to me, she said, you know, I will request you. I will tell them that I can't do the class without you as my co-learner. And I'm so grateful that she came back for another semester, and I'm really going to miss her dearly next semester.
One of the reasons I wanted to ask you that question and listen, why I enjoyed listening to you talk about your experience of Leaf, is that in a way, I wonder if the language you used and the feeling that you capture when you're in her presence and in her class, I wonder if these are clues as to what the antidote or the healing balm that is needed for the kinds of anxieties and depressions and experience those kinds of things that are alive in people your age.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So we can circle back to that, but let's do the depressing stuff now. Let me ask you about that, he says, chuckling. So the conversation we had with Leaf, her observation of excitement in young people I think from her perspective, the glaring absence of excitement, and excitement meaning like engagement with life, excitement understood as, I'm happy to be alive. I've got things that feel meaningful to me to pursue. Excitement in that sense. And so let's just start with you, Bryn. You've already expressed something that excites you, which is being with Leaf and in as a co-learner in that class. But tell me more about, is it easy or difficult for you to feel excited? What are things that get in the way?
Yeah, I am a pretty excited person. I love the little things. I fully understand the circumstances where my age group doesn't feel excited and they don't feel engaged and they don't feel like they wake up in the morning with excitement. And, you know, I've had that before. I struggled with depression in the past, so I did have that before. And I did wake up and I felt like every day was a loop and it was just, there was nothing to look forward to, but I got out of that and I'm really thankful for that. But now it's like it's almost like I have too many things to be excited for that I spend my days excited instead of like in the present. And that is something that I should work on instead of being like, oh, I can't wait to do this tomorrow. I can't wait to do this. It's like, I should probably be more present and be excited about things in the now. But just this morning, I went on a walk here in Keene. It's beautiful out. It's 55 degrees. I love when it's not wintertime. I love nice weather. So I've been looking forward to it all week. Main Street, there was a coffee place, Prime Roast Coffee. And just this morning, I was so excited. I've planned this all week. I was going to go for a walk, go to the bank, and then get a coffee and just sit there by myself. And I woke up this morning and I was excited and I got ready. And I went on a little walk and it was so beautiful. But I feel grateful that I have those things to be excited about because I do that for myself. I kind of plan things that I know I'm going to be excited for. And this weekend I'm going to see my family in Maine and I'm so excited. I love spending time with my family. So I have a lot of things that, you know, I feel excited for, and I'm thankful to have that, but I do understand where it comes from, where people don't have those things. Maybe they don't get to see their family on the weekends. They're isolated here at college. They feel like they're only here for work, to do their work, and then they just go to work after class maybe, and they feel isolated in their room. So I definitely see where people could be coming from, but I'm thankful and I'm lucky to have a lot of things that I get excited for. And I feel excitement and I love being excited. So I feel grateful for that. But I can definitely see where that's coming from. And I've experienced that in the past. So I definitely have that experience and that knowledge.
Thank you for just opening yourself up to share that you have experienced depression. May I ask you about that? Do you mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you were in that space, can you describe what that was like?
Yeah, it's hard to explain. A lot of people experience it, and I think everybody has this sort of, it's kind of hard to explain unless you've been in it, but the way that I experienced it was that I wasn't feeling sad, and I wasn't feeling depressed. I felt very empty. I felt like I was just a shell of a person and that there was really nothing that could get me out of that. And I would have things that I was excited for, but it wouldn't bring that excitement to me. I was a cheerleader at the time, and I did cheer for 10 years. So it was something that I loved, but every single day going to practice, and I had a really understanding coach who knew what I was going through, so she didn't push me too hard. She understood what I was going through, and she was very easy on me, which was very, very nice at the time. But I would go to cheer, and I wasn't excited for our competition coming up, and I wasn't excited for the football games. I just felt like there was nothing there. I felt like empty. You know, I didn't feel any feelings. And I was like, why am I not crying? Because I'm a really emotional person when it comes to being happy or sad. It's like, I'm the extreme. I'm a very emotional person. And I'm like, why am I not crying? Like, I feel so empty. I feel so sad, but I'm not crying. And it's because I wasn't necessarily sad. There was really nothing for me to be sad about. I wasn't having any feelings. I wasn't feeling excited to wake up the next day or excited to go to class or excited to go to cheer. I just felt bored, I guess, with my life. And I just felt empty, like I had no feelings. And it was really hard for me because I'm a very expressive person. And people were like, what's wrong? Why are you so upset? I'm like, I don't know. You know, it's tough. I don't know. But that's kind of all I can explain it as, was just an empty feeling. I was kind of like a shell.
If you're a young person under 25, we would love to hear from you and maybe have you on the show to have the kind of conversation you're listening to right now. We'd love to hear what life is like for you. Are you hopeful or feeling empty? Are you energized or feeling tired? Send us an email. Our email address will be in the show notes, or you can find us at our website, whatingods.com. That's all one word, whatingods.com. Now, back to our conversation with Bryn.
Yeah.
You've explained it and expressed it well. The follow-up question is, can you say what shifted?
Yeah. My experience is probably very different from a lot of other people, but this was actually a little over 3 years ago. So my boyfriend now, he had expressed that, you know, he had a crush on me, and I had liked him in the past, and we went to school together for a long time. We were always kind of tee-hee, like we liked each other, and we had a crush every once in a while, but nothing really ever came of it. And at the time, I was a cheerleader, and he kind of told me, he was like, oh, I kind of like you. I have a crush on you. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I didn't really care. And it's not that I didn't like him. It's just that I had no feelings. So when he told me that he liked me, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, that's so exciting. You know, I've liked him before. I was just kind of like, okay, cool. And I moved on. And I didn't promise him anything. I wasn't like, oh yeah. But so I just kind of stayed in touch with him, and we talked, and then every once in a while, I would be like excited to see his name pop up on my phone, and I'd be excited to what he said. And, you know, it brought back my excitement, brought back a spark. And then eventually, like a month or so later, we started dating. And like I said, that was 3 years ago. So we're still dating today. But yeah, we started dating, and then we started hanging out. So, and he played basketball too. So I'd be excited for him to come watch me at the cheer game before we were dating. Like, it was just kind of like it just brought back a spark. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to be there. Like, I got to do my best cheer, and I got to be smiley and everything. And then once we started dating, I'd be like, oh my gosh, he has a game today. I can't wait to go to his game after school, and we can hang out after. And it just brought back a feeling. It brought back any feeling. And it wasn't something that I was looking for while I was depressed. I wasn't looking for a boyfriend. I wasn't looking for anything. It just kind of came to me. And I'm really thankful for him. And I'm thankful that he pulled me out of that. And since then, I've worked on my mental health, and I've worked on myself, because, you know, you can't be dependent on somebody like that for your mental health. Say if we ever, you know, separate, I don't want to go right back into being depressed just because he's not bringing me spark. And I don't think that will happen, because I brought a lot of happiness to myself, and I've learned who I am over these 3 years. We've both changed and grown up a lot. So that's my experience, though, is that really I just got a boyfriend, and it kind of brought back a little bit of spark and excitement and gave me something to look forward to. And then after that, you know, it came and went too, because right after we started dating, COVID hit. So we were dating in November, and then COVID hit in March, and we couldn't see each other. And I kind of slipped right back into that. And I realized, like, I don't want this to happen where if I can't see him, I get depressed. But it was also, you know, it wasn't just him at the time. It was family situation and COVID. You know, that was a really tough time. But since then, I've definitely worked on myself, and I don't think that I would slip right back into it if I couldn't see him anymore. But that was my experience, is that I got a boyfriend. So
as you were sharing that story, Bryn, I was thinking of, I was connecting the story of your developing relationship with your boyfriend with how you began in talking about Leaf. And the connection for me was that I just think this is true about human beings. It's in relationship that we find our fullest sense of self and our fullest sense of life. And I know it's a different kind of relationship, but you know, the way you talk about Leaf and how she sees people, and so this very powerful image to me of being seen and a feeling of belonging and that somebody sees me. These are so powerful in human experience. Tell me about your observations of your peers. There's a lot of, there's just another recent study that came out, and I'm not real good at remembering the names of studies, but they almost all say the same thing, which is people your age are full of anxiety and depression. And this particular study was actually even emphasizing for young women, it's even more, maybe the anxiety element is even more pronounced. So what are your observations of your peers with regards to anxiety and depression and these things?
You know, it's tough because a lot of people want to point their fingers at the phones and the social media. And a lot of people in my generation clap back with, no, it's, you know, it's the way that the world is set up, and it's the future generations that, you know, are coming up. Maybe they have more hope, and the older generations set us up for failure, and, you know, with the housing market and the environment, you know, and everything like that. But I will say it is heavily influenced by social media and by the phones. And, you know, especially when it comes to TikTok, I will say I love TikTok. I think everybody loves TikTok, but it's formed around what you want to see. So it's addicting, and it's hard because you kind of slip into these, not realities, but you slip into these videos, and, you know, I'll be scrolling and I'll see the funniest video I've ever seen, and then the next video is somebody putting their dog down and I'll want to cry, and then the next video is a baby. And it's like, I think it's unhealthy for these people to be seeing, these people including me, I think it's unhealthy to be, you know, shifting emotions like that, because for me, I'm a really empathetic person. So I see somebody crying and putting their dog down and I want to sob my eyes out for them, you know? But then I scroll and it's the cutest baby I've ever seen in my life, and I just feel so happy, and I'm like, I love it. But it's tough because you're switching your emotions like back and forth, and you don't know what the next video is and you want to see it. And so it turns you into this like robot where you're just scrolling and scrolling because the next video is formed to you. So you want to see what it is. You don't want to miss anything. You want to see what, you know, what's coming up next. Like, I want to see if that's a cute puppy or if it's a baby or anything like that. But I think it definitely, it sucks you in, and it's hard to get out of it. So I think that definitely contributes to people's feelings of anxiety and depression, especially depression, I would say, because you want to just stay in your bed all day and watch TikToks. Why would you want to go to class and learn about something that's maybe not so boring, and now you don't have the attention span for an hour and 45 minutes of an ethics class or, you know, a math class, because you get 10-second videos on your phone and you think that you're learning a lot, and you could be learning a lot. I think TikTok has a lot of pros to it. You see a lot of different cultures, a lot of different, you know, experiences that you would never have or that you haven't had, and you learn a lot. But it's very fast-paced, and it's terrible for our attention span. Now, you know, you can't sit through an hour and 45 minutes of a teacher talking at you because you're not getting that instant gratification of like, oh, that was cool. What are the comments? What are everybody else saying about this? And it's same for when it comes to anxiety. I think we're getting way too much information. It's information overload, you know? We're not reading the newspaper and getting only a certain amount of information. We're getting information in our hands the second it happens, you know? Like, just on Monday, Michigan State, there was a shooting at Michigan State. And, you know, that's devastating. But we find out about that instantly. And now, you know, college kids have friends at Michigan State, and now they can't focus in class on Monday morning because they're getting updates about Michigan State. And I think that's great that, you know, we're getting these updates and we're being, you know, aware of what's going on, but it's horrible. You don't just read about it in, you know, in the newspaper the next day or hear about it on the news at night. You're getting it right in your pocket and you can't really focus on that. And, you know, it brings that sort of anxiety. You can't stop looking at it. You can't stop checking it. It's like we get terrible news every single day just at our fingertips. And there's nothing you can do to escape that, honestly. If you have a phone, and you go on your phone, there's nothing you can do to escape the bad news. And I think that really sucks people in. And I think that is, you know, the root of a lot of people's anxieties. And it's been like that for our whole life since we've had phones.
Right.
Bryn, that's fascinating. I've never heard someone explain TikTok and the experience of it the way that you just did. And I'll share with you what went through my mind as you were talking about the amount of information that you need to, that just comes. It just, one thing after the next, information, information, information. My mind went to meaning making and how we need time as human beings. This is my observation. We need time to reflect as human beings on information to be able to make meaning out of it. And from the way you seem to be describing this, and it certainly makes sense in terms of my own observations of the world, not just of young people, but we really don't. Not only do we not take the time to reflect in order to make meaning of information, but I'm not sure we've got the, I mean, time is one necessary ingredient, but then there's also, like, what are the larger narratives of a human, what's a human life for? Like, we've lost even the capacity to, I think, even as a society, to reflect on that kind of question, which to me is a pretty important question. So those are my observations. I would love to, there's no question in there, but I'm just curious if you agree, disagree, or anything you would want to add to that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. You have to take a lot of time to make meaning of the situation, especially when it comes to, you know, awful, awful news like the Michigan State shooting. You have to have that time to think about it and grieve the people. You know, I don't know anybody at Michigan State, but I have to take that time to grieve, you know, that feeling of safety almost, because, you know, the next day I walk outside and it's windy and a sign blows over and it's loud and outside, and, you know, you look around and everybody's kind of on high alert because we're scared, you know. And I saw, funny enough, a TikTok this morning of somebody who, she went to Sandy Hook before college. She was a victim of Sandy Hook. She was a survivor. And she goes to Michigan, and now she's a survivor of Michigan. And it's horrible, you know? And you have to kind of take that and, you know, send love and send light to those people. But you can't do that when the next morning you wake up and there's another shooting. And now all of a sudden we forget that Sandy Hook existed, and we forget, you know, that the last shooting happened, you know, 4 months ago. And it's really hard because there's not much we can do. But I think you're absolutely right. We have to take that time and put meaning to it and grieve, you know, grieve for other people and send love and send light to other people. But it's so tough when, you know, you see that TikTok and you're like, oh, that's awful. Like, I'm sending you love, sending you light. And then you scroll in the next video and you forget about the video before that. But it's just, you have to kind of take that and put meaning to it. And I think you're right. We don't have that kind of time because it's one thing after another.
So what would be helpful?
I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know. I don't know if there's really anything that can be done at this point. Although I did hear yesterday, somebody in person, not on TikTok, was talking about a dopamine break, where you don't go on TikTok, you don't go on social media, and, you know, you just text people and you call people. And I think that's, it kind of gives your brain a break from the instant dopamine, the instant serotonin that you get when you go on TikTok and everything. But not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody has the urge to do that. So I don't know that there's really anything that, there's really any sure fix to it, you know?
Is there anything else that you'd like to add or a question I didn't ask that you would like to answer? I know that in preparation, I sent you a last question about hope and hopefulness as you think about the future. So maybe that would be a place to bring our conversation to a close. If you have any thoughts about hope and the future, hope and the future.
Yeah, I have hope for the future. I do. A lot of people, a lot of my friends around me are like, I'm not going to have kids because, you know, the world's coming to an end. The world's going to be on fire. And, you know, I see where they're coming from and I hear that anxiety and I hear that fear from them. But I have hope for the future, especially with, you know, there are benefits to all this information that we're getting. It's not just negative information that we get so quickly. It's positive information, too. There's a lot of, I'm on a side of TikTok with a lot of parents and a lot of babies just because that's what I love. I love, you know, I'm a very maternal person. I can't wait to have my own kids. So I see a lot of videos on that and I've learned a lot, you know, even as I'm a preschool teacher now. And there's a lot of tools that I've gained from videos and from, you know, TikToks because they've described it as, you know, this is kids' first time on earth. And a lot of people forget that we have expectations and standards for little kids and we forget that this is their first time ever on earth. You know, this is our first time ever on earth, but we have a lot of knowledge that they don't have. And I think sometimes we expect a lot out of little kids. And you know, the term gentle parenting is kind of popular right now. And it's basically just respecting your kids and just treating them like human beings. And it kind of reminds me of Leaf because she treats us like human beings and she calls us her co-learners. And I think that's a good way to parent too, because obviously you need to have rules and standards and authority over your child. But at the same time, they're just kids. This is their first time ever being a kid. And this is your first time ever being a parent maybe. And, you know, they're a human being just like you are. And they're going to make mistakes just like you do and just like you did. So I don't know. I have hope for the future that a lot of us will, you know, end the cycle that maybe we went through or, you know, take what we learned throughout our lives and on social media. And there's a lot of help out there. There's a lot of groups and support for each other, even through social media. People support each other a lot. And I think that nobody's going to be alone, which can be a good thing or a bad thing. There's always going to be opinions, but when it comes to, you know, people raising their kids in the future, I think there's a lot of tools and help out there. And I think that that can benefit a lot of people. So I do have hope for the future. And I'm not one of those people that sees the world on fire and everything. You know, I'm realistic. I know that there's a lot of bad things going on, but the world's not on fire. You know, you're just looking at a bonfire, I guess.
That's a great place for us to draw this conversation to a close. Bryn, what a pleasure. I'm so grateful that you agreed to come on and have this conversation. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. And thank you, Leaf, for, you know, everything, but for setting this up.
If you like what you've heard today and you like what the What in God's Name Project is doing, please consider sponsoring our work for less than $1 a week on Patreon. It's barely any money for you, but it means a lot to us, and so we thank you. Our core values are be curious, go deep, and shine light.